Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 118. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Monday, Steelers Nation. Dave, it is finally officially draft week. Round one getting underway Thursday night. Rounds two and three Friday. Finish things out on Saturday. So I'm excited. You're excited. We're all excited. And yeah, our speculation can finally soon end, but not yet. A little more speculation to go.
Absolutely. It's going to be a busy look. I mean, the draft runs through Saturday night, and then the process of tracking the undrafted free agents, and then all the press conferences and all. So, I mean, even though the draft ends on Saturday night, we'll be pushing on into early next week, and going to be a busy next couple of weeks here for sure, leading up until the team obviously reports for rookie mini camp, and it's about that time again. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of speculation still left to do. Our mock drafts are coming, you and I, here in the next couple of days. Several of the final mock drafts are from other contributors are slowly going up on the site now. We recorded a draft roundtable Sunday night with several of the contributors that will go up Tuesday. I don't know if I might make that midnight or, you know, as early as possible on Tuesday. So, busy time here. And then, you know, today we're recapping what was and was not said during the annual pre-draft press conference given by Omar Khan and Mike Tomlin. And, you know, we always I got myself ready, slapped myself on both cheeks quite a bit to
hope
to
you try, mean your face.
To try to parse what wasn't said. And there was a lot of what wasn't said, but we'll spend a lot of time talking about that today, I think.
Yeah. Reason why this episode's coming out a bit later here on Monday is we wanted to wait until after the Tomlin and Khan pre-draft annual press conference, which took place noon on Monday, to react to that. As Dave mentioned, we'll have a Depot draft roundtable go up on Tuesday at some time. My mock draft, my final one, will go up on Tuesday morning. Dave's Wednesday morning. We'll talk about it for the Wednesday show, the final podcast before round one, day one of the NFL draft on Thursday. So just a quick recap of where everything stands in that regard. But as Dave mentioned, Tomlin, Khan holding their press conference. I know they're never going to say much. I was hoping for a little more from this, and even from the questions and the responses. There are some things here to note and talk about. And again, I understand they're always going to, you know, be pretty close to the vest when it comes to not telling you who they're going to pick. But this one, I don't know, maybe it's recency. I felt like past years you learned a little bit more about where Pittsburgh's head was at than you did this year.
I think Omar Khan slowly getting better at saying less, and how quickly he's been able to do that in what will be just his second draft that he's overseeing here. Yeah, look, I mean, we go into this every year thinking it's going to be vanilla, and to what great degree of vanilla, and how much will we actually learn? How much will we be left to read in between the lines? And really, there's not a lot this go around here. I mean, they obviously didn't come out and tell us who their pick was. You know, obviously, a lot of questions about the center position. And I'll say this, and it's something that we knew. They're not going to draft a quarterback in round one.
They did tell us that.
And I'm going to go out on a limb and predict that they won't draft a running back or a long snapper or a punter or a kicker in first round. Now you get to the point where, it's a little something that we've talked a little bit about throughout this process. Might they address the quarterback position in later rounds? I don't think you can, based on what Khan said, I don't think you can can totally count out the possibility of that happen. He did mention that all three quarterbacks are under contract or currently under contract for 1 year. So I don't think it should come as a huge shock if this team drafts a quarterback late in this draft, albeit not guaranteed there. Hey, here's the thing. What do you think the moment that they get out of that presser and they get behind that closed door, do you think they give each other a high five and say, oh, got him, you know? In other words, I mean, it very, very well was a Seinfeld episode, a press conference about nothing.
Yeah, I think it's a box for them to check. And, you know, as long as they don't accidentally divulge anything of importance, which I don't think they did, they're probably just moving on with the business of finalizing their board in final draft meetings and just preparing. Frankly, although they're not done, Omar Khan acknowledged they're not completely done with their draft prep. They're basically towards the end. We're a lot busier in terms of draft related stuff than they are. They've had their meetings. They've scouted the whole process. They've had pro days and visits and everything. Once the draft rolls around, you kind of just wait for things to fall into place. Now, of course, there's trades and the movement and reacting to what the other 31 teams do, but the bulk of their work is basically over, and we're the ones kind of running in the hamster wheel right now. What were your thoughts on, because we knew he would be asked about it, Omar Khan, Mike Tomlin, about the possibility of trading, going up, going down? Again, a bit of a vague answer, which was to be expected, and I think the only thing any team can say is we're open to basically anything. But Khan did say you never trade away from a good player, which of course you don't. But maybe that seemed to hint a little bit there isn't a strong appetite to move down.
Yeah, and we've said before, you know, that the only reason you trade down is, you know, if you do, it's probably only going to be a couple of spots, specifically in the first round, and it's going to be because you're guaranteed to get, you know, one of a couple players probably. And if you just look historically at this team, how long it's been, you have to go all the way back to what, 2001 was it? The last time this team traded down in the first round, and that was for Casey Hampton. Look, anything can happen. And he said you have to entertain. Basically, you have to entertain all options. You're never going to trade away from a good player. Anything can obviously happen, but as we sit here right now, and it's felt this way for a little while now, it would be a bit surprising to see them trade down in the first round this year.
Yeah, I've floated the idea and argued why they should consider it, and I'm sure they will, and Khan, as you mentioned, will consider any options. It is interesting when you map this thing out, what teams could come up. And again, it's unpredictable because the draft is unpredictable, but with a lot of chatter on Arizona wanting to come up from 27, I know they're at 4. We'll see what they do there. Do they stay? Do they push back? They moved around the board last year. They could do it again. And I thought, and I just happened to randomly stumble across this, was not looking for it necessarily, but Tampa Bay, their GM, Jason Lick, whenever he spoke to the media in his pre-draft press conference last week, said, right around pick 20 is when the Bucs will have conversations. Do we want to go up? Is there somebody there that we want to target? And he mentioned number 20 specifically, of course, where Pittsburgh is selecting. So that was interesting as well. I think those make sense. Arizona has a league high 11 draft picks this year. Tampa Bay has a pair of third rounders. If I'm Pittsburgh, I have to be open to that because I think there are so many needs for this team, and the draft is deep at positions that I need, as in Pittsburgh, center, tackle, wide receiver, corner. I think that opens up the possibility. But again, odds are they will stay because it's always the safe bet, and they just don't make first-round moves too often. They did last year, of course, but I still think you have to consider it just because of the needs and the depth this class offers.
You know, and if Tampa Bay was the one looking to move up to 20, I mean, that's six spots, right? I mean, that's quite, you know, you would assume you're going to swap first picks plus something else within that. I mean, that's theoretically a long way to go down.
It is, but to me, if you're going to move down, and we mentioned this on the draft roundtable that'll air tomorrow, you don't want to move down for a fourth round pick, unless it is maybe just two spots and you can really accurately map out. Because there is a risk, as you mentioned before, Dallas at 24, they're in O-line center markets, and could they take a center? So if you're going to move down, I think you got to get back at least a third, and you can't go down two spots and pick up a third round pick.
And once again, we talked about kind of that murderer's row of kind of question about teams needing centers. If indeed that ends up being the high priority with Dallas, Green Bay, Tampa Bay, were three of the teams I think that we highlighted that, you know, do you really want to get by, you know, it's good now that you're ahead of those three teams, especially if you want a center. Now, look, nothing prevents any of those teams from trading ahead of you, right? You know, but it just, it feels messy, Alex, overall. You've got to really have a good reason, I think, to go down those six spots. You have to have a handful of players circled. And once again, I mean, anything can happen. It just it doesn't feel like this is going to be the year to break that streak.
Sure, I get that. And again, ultimately, I think they do.
Would I love it? Yeah, I would absolutely love it. And I mean, how many years would you absolutely not love it? You know, if we're being honest about this, to go down and get extra picks, and you know, especially a third round, especially in this draft, because we've had several conversations throughout this process. Man, there's like five positions and four picks that you would, you know, ideally you'd like to have that fifth pick within the first three rounds to address all five of those positions. But that's a perfect world situation. And we don't live in a, you know, unfortunately, every draft can't be a perfect world scenario there. So would it hurt my feelings if they went down a couple of spots and then still got a player, let's say a center, and was able to pick up a third round pick or in the process? Yeah, there's not that many people who wouldn't love that. But I think the reality of the matter is that it feels unlikely to happen.
Sure, I get that. I'll just advocate it, at least for the idea. But as I've always said, it depends on the offers, depends on the board. If a great player falls into your lap, then as Khan mentioned, you don't trade away from that opportunity to get that guy. And I think talent will fall. Again, when quarterbacks, you know, are going to dominate the first round, three in the top three picks, and McCarthy or whoever the fourth quarterback is, and there could be a fifth. A lot of chatter on Michael Penix Jr. Could he go to the Raiders? Something like that. If he goes, if there's five quarterbacks in the top 19, it's going to push down a ton of talent. You know, a couple of receivers will go, a couple edge guys are going to go, or at least one in Dallas Turner. You know, some of the tackles will go, but some of them are going to fall. And so that will probably create incentive for Pittsburgh to sit there and stay.
What do you think about Tomlin talking about, you know, historically being asked if position 20 is the sweet spot?
Yeah, I was trying to see exactly what he meant by that. I guess that's just kind of a spot where teams at the bottom think, okay, we can go up 10 spots and don't have to give up too much, as opposed to going up 15 or 17 spots, and that becomes pretty pricey to do so. So I'm guessing that's what he was getting at, but I wasn't quite clear what he was referencing.
Yeah, me either. I don't know if that was just word salad to fill some time there or what, you know.
I thought the most notable quote, though, of the press conference came from Mike Tomlin regarding the pro day travels. And I was really disappointed. Nobody asked him why they only went to four pro days. That would have been one of the first questions on my list, even though the answer probably wouldn't have been earth shattering, like would have been just schedule and kind of they throw their hands up. But Tomlin did joke and kind of not joke that sometimes he looks at players at pro days that he's not interested in to kind of throw the media and you and I off the scent there in terms of what he's looking at. But I don't know about that for sure. I can see some of that to a degree, him talking to some kind of random guys. And he talked to, like, you know, Will Shipley, the running back from Clemson this year.
I was drafting
Will Shipley.
Right. I was going to bring up the word because Will Shipley was one of the guys that you can see him hanging around and talking to. And obviously, we don't think Will Shipley's going to be. I mean, if they did, it would be sixth, seventh round and those kind of things there. But, I mean, do they really care? I mean, is it really that big of a deal? Because if you had an actual camera just designated to follow Mike Tomlin around at every pro day, and the camera was fixated on him every moment he was visible there, how many different players would he talk to?
And then
what kind of conclusion, you know, we only get the steel shots and they're notable because they're the only things that we find. Mm-hmm. Right. But I mean, if you honestly had a camera with him moving, catching every action that he had during a pro day. And look, he doesn't know what still, I mean, there are hundreds of people there, right? You know, he doesn't know who's taking a picture of him in what moment and what's going to surface on the internet. What I'm getting at here is, I mean, how many players do you think he actually has a conversation with during a pro day? And whatever that list of players is, I mean, how many different rabbit hole conclusions could you, wouldn't you want it out there that being seen talking to, you know, 20 players during a pro day setting because of all the confusion that it could possibly create anyway within that? I mean, was this just him just trying to be funny? Because I don't get the value in trying to mislead somebody by somebody that you're talking to, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I still think that's a little tongue in cheek from Tomlin. Listen, as much as we obsess about all the details and minutia about pro day travels, I really don't care about whenever someone snaps a photo of Tomlin talking to a prospect. To me, that's a coach doing his job. If you're at the pro day, you're there to talk to the guys and learn about them. And
I mean, was he talking to Junior Colson to make sure he got a shot showed up? So we immediately go, well, there's Mike Tomlin talking to Junior Colson. We're going to, that means we got to put him in the third round or fourth round of a mock draft. You know,
sure.
The Steelers have high interest in Junior Colson, you know?
Yeah. I think that's all people get too wrapped up in that, and that we don't even really talk about that much, but I know the internet kind of runs with that. To me, I care about where he goes. I really don't care about who he's talking to unless it's a pro day dinner, because that has more importance. But in terms of just the general, you're at the pro day, you know, you're by prospect. That's what Tomlin does. Tomlin, he loves talking to people, connecting with people. You watch him at the Senior Bowl. He's always in somebody's ear. As he mentioned, he's the most boots on the ground head coach in football. That's his skill set. That's his strength. And so to me, no one really should, you know, freak out if he's talking to any prospect at a pro day.
You know, going over in the end zone and talking to Bo Nix at what was it, the Senior Bowl,
right?
You know, that could be, you know, what, you know, how you doing, Bo? How's the family and all like that? Or it could be, you know, what's going on with Jackson Powers Johnson? Mm-hmm. Give me a nugget I don't know about. You know, it could be 80 different things. You know, look, we obsess over certain things of this process. Most notably, where Mike Tomlin and Omar Khan show up, and it's not like we have to hunt to find those guys when they do show up. It's big news whenever they show up. The second part is we like to track what, you know, what scouts and what position coaches go where during the pre-draft process. We also like to track, you know, who comes in for pre-draft visitors. And there are, and Mike Tomlin laid out today the various reasons why you bring some of these guys in. And look, as much as we try to use those lists when compiling our mock drafts and all like that, the reality is that all the Steelers picks are not going to be pre-draft visitors, right? And you know, you got an interesting scenario now this year with them only going to 4 pro days, which, you know, brings into question, will this be the year that the first round pick is not a pro day, Mike Tomlin, Omar Khan, you know, present type scenario there. You would have to think, though, there's good chances that at least one of the draft picks that the Steelers make this year, just from a historical standpoint, will come out of one of those four places that Mike Tomlin went to. But yeah, I mean, I just trying to wrap it up in a bow here. I don't know if he's just trying to be funny or not, but I would hope that he's not trying to talk to specific people just because two guys in their mom's basement are hoping to get a photo of him talking to Junior Colson or Will Shipley.
Sure. And again, I don't think either of us put as much stock into those specific conversations as the internet at large. Tomlin's speaking to probably a ton of guys at a pro day workout. No question about that the night before.
Do I love doing it? I love it. I love every aspect of the pro day cycle and getting these people here and there. But you have to, over the years, you try to connect the dots in other fashion, you know, various fashions as well.
Sure. Bottom line is where they go for pro days is still important because that's where they're spending their time and their finite resources. And they can go to, you know, one pro day a day, essentially, aside from ones that are very close to each other. Occasionally you'll get a Duke North Carolina the way Arthur Smith did. But for Tomlin and Kahn, usually it's one a day and only a couple, you know, less this year, but usually at average number 7 or 8 per draft cycle. So it's important. We'll see how it plays out this year.
And he did kind of talk out, not much. I mean, not a huge talk out of the other side of his mouth, but he says, personally, when I'm at a pro day, I'm trying to get to know as many people as possible. And that's why we go to some of the pro days that we go to, talking about Georgia. We go to Bama. We go to Michigan kind of routinely because you see a lot of prospects. It's something else we've talked about of why they go to the pro days that they do. However, then you look back at what was it last year? They showed up at Iowa State, you know, along with, what was it, Iowa too, right?
Right. That was one of those where it's same day they're close and you get the twofer.
Right. You know, they want to go to the big schools where they get to cast the biggest net, as Mike Tomlin said.
Sure. So we all know the data and history there, but a funny quip from Mike Tomlin all the same. What else did he have to say? Let me kind of scroll through and just find out the biggest things. Interesting, and he was asked about this. Tomlin didn't bring it up on his own, but was discussed, you know, when you evaluate a tackle that might kick inside and there's a bunch of prospects this year Pittsburgh has looked at, who are those conversion candidates? Graham Barton, Trey Fontenot, Talese Fuaga, et cetera. You know, he was asked, Tomlin was, what do you look for in the traits to try to project that evaluation? And Tomlin said basically football IQ and any sort of background there. And to me, that basically describes Graham Barton, where you have the high football IQ and the background there playing center his freshman season before kicking back out to left tackle. So I don't want to put my tinfoil hat on too tight and say that he's, you know, trying to hint at taking Graham Barton. But that comment to me described Graham Barton.
But don't you know, would you think that, I mean, he knows we're no dummies out here. We know, you know, it's easy to link Graham Barton to the Steelers, and everybody has had the conversations, most everybody, about the center experience that kid had during his freshman year and how, you know, it's not entirely a foreign position to him. Do you think he's going to routinely throw out here is your one key takeaway from this, you know, oops, I slipped?
No, I don't think that. But the issue with Barton is how well can you project him inside? How confident are you that he can play NFL center, which he would in Pittsburgh? And with Tomlin's thought process broadly, but it applies to Barton, is okay to try to evaluate these guys, look at their football IQ. Do they have the ability to make line calls and identify, you know, fronts and shifts and help make changes if need be? And have you done it before in the past? And if you check both those boxes, we are more comfortable projecting you into a full-time role there. And Barton checks those boxes.
Sure.
And so, that again, that's my takeaway from that. Nothing earth-shattering. We've talked about Barton, about why he could be that pick and why teams are projecting him inside and specifically to center. Although I think there's a case to be made, as you've made, Dave, about him going to guard. But just trying to fish for something notable, that was one of my takeaways.
Look, will true or false, the Steelers will draft one of Graham Barton, Jackson Powers Johnson, or Zach Frazier?
I'll let you know tomorrow when I make my mock draft. I've gone back and forth. I've been leaning them going center. To kind of play off of that, though, you know, one of the first questions, maybe the first one, was about the center position. And Omar Kahn did again mention internal options. Does that hint that they're comfortable with, you know, not taking a center in the first round and they're more confident in Nate Herbig than you and I are? Or is that just Kahn giving a general answer?
Well, then to add on to that, Mike Tomlin says that they're not overly thirsty when it comes to one position, right? Well,
yeah, but if they were, would he tell you? We're thirsty here, right, dying.
Right. These pretzels are making me thirsty, you know? The first thing that popped into my head. I mean, do they really believe that? Look, I can't help but keep going back to what Omar Khan said around the combine, around the combine time, where he says, "We owe it to ourselves to find the next great Steelers center." All right. So, all right. Does that mean you're going to try to find it on your own roster right now? I have a hard time believing that. But this might have been the one time that Omar Khan, I don't want to say slip, because, I mean, it's been a Captain Obvious kind of thought, you know, across, you know, analyst and fan base anyway. But there's a standard here. He told Jenna Harder of PXI around the combine time, I got spoiled. I was around Marquise Pouncey and Jeff Hardings. That was my time here. Obviously, Damonte Dawson. There were plenty of great centers here. There's a high standard, so we owe it to ourselves to look at everything to try to find the next great Steelers center. What does that mean?
It means, I'll let you know after Thursday what it means, I guess, ultimately. I get that, and I've talked about the need, and I am not as confident as maybe they are in some of their internal options. But, you know, Omar has mentioned Nate Herbig a ton. I was just pulling up a quote from, I guess it was the Combine, and there was a quote where he repeatedly kept saying, "We feel good about Nate Herbig. We have Nate Herbig." Khan mentioning it today, not Herbig explicitly, but mentioning we have internal options. So I don't know. It kind of muddies the waters. His comments have gone, I think, both ways.
I mean, it's no surprise. My thought process here, I'll be surprised if they don't come out of this draft with one of those three guys.
I get that. Really, the question is, though, well, an additional question is, will it be at 20 or would it be a potential trade up in round two? That also complicates things.
Right. That's the hardest to me. That's what makes mocking this thing the hardest aspect of mocking this thing at the top, and then thus could have obviously fallout impact for the remainder of the draft there. Because if you don't draft one, and look, I'm the king of saying that centers get pushed down, but this I went back to these last couple of days and watched more tape on Barton, on Jackson Powers Johnson and Zach Frazier. And I would be comfortable with this team drafting one of those three. All right. The thing is how far does the third one, or maybe even two of them, push down into that second round? And where this thing becomes messiest is if you don't draft one in the first round, you know, let's say at 20th overall, you don't move down, yada, yada. How guaranteed can you be? You know, I've gone back and forth. Will Jackson Powers Johnson, one of Jackson Powers Johnson or Zach Frazier fall down to 51? There's been times in this process where I thought maybe one of them would. And then there's been, you know, most recently, you kind of wonder if that will be the case, if they'll have to go up to get one of those three. If they don't land any of those three, then it gets super messy, it feels like, at that point. You know, you're talking about that next tier, and you wonder if those guys can be day one starters moving forward from there. So, you know, to me, the most consternation that I have when it comes to this draft, because look, you better have a good reason of going somebody other than Amarius Mims at 20, really, if you want to think about it, right? I mean, if you want to break this thing down, it comes down to, you better have a good reason to go away from Amarius Mims because of the other previous dots and Blues Clues and historical and Tomlin and Khan at pro days and things along those lines. And if there was a reason to go away from that, it would be just because the center position as a whole, and there being such a need there.
Yeah, no, I get that. It's still the question I wrestle with, and the question I will wrestle with until the pick comes in at 20, assuming they stay there, is it a tackle or is it a center? And if it's not a center at 20, you know, had they brought in more center day two, day three types, that would have told me maybe they're open to not taking it early. But really, the only actual center they brought in beyond the top three was Hunter Norzad from Penn State, who I do think is going to be their plan B, fallback plan, if they don't take a center, take one of those top three guys. But, you know, I mean, they brought in McCormick, but he's been a guard his whole career that might end up playing some center. I just wonder, you know, if they really were thinking we're taking a tackle, we're not going to take a center in round one, wouldn't they brought in more day three center types, where they brought in a lot of day three defensive linemen?
You would think that, but you know, they did go to the Georgia Pro Day, so Van Granger was there, and you know, I'm sure they have done their homework on him throughout this process. So and once again, you know, there's different reasons that you bring different guys in. You know, Braden Fisk, I kind of think of him, the FSU defensive tackle. Could that be a situation where you might decide to double back to him 4 years from now, you know, in free agency, much in the way that they just did with who did they just sign?
Lowry,
you know, a guy that doesn't match up perfectly with some of the things they've looked for in the past, especially the arm length, but he did enough in the NFL. You got to know him, that if you got in a situation where you needed that kind of guy that wasn't the perfect type measurables, you feel comfortable with him, especially with the amount of NFL tape that he had. You know, not all, and this is something that Tomlin laid out nicely today, it's not new information. There's different reasons that you bring these guys in. Some of it's medical, some of you just didn't get to know enough about some of these guys during the pre-draft process. There's different degrees of that, but back to the core, I think of what you're getting at there is, yeah, you would think that if one of those three, if they thought there was a chance that one of those top three centers weren't going to be a Pittsburgh Steeler by the time the end of the, you know, second round per se, have they looked at enough fallback options there?
Right. Now, to play devil's advocate, how many day two, day three type tackles did they bring in? A couple, but not a ton of them. Travis Glover from Georgia State. You know, maybe one of these tackles will fall, a Guyton, somebody like that, but he's still going to be an earlier round type. So, I mean, they have done obviously a ton of homework. Pat Meyer was at, you know, all these pro days for the tackles as well. Just really wrestling with it overall, as you guys can probably tell.
Sure. And what were we wrestling with a year, the same time last year? You know, it felt like it, you know, one of maybe three tackles and, you know, Joey Porter Jr., right?
Or any of the top corners. There was Christian Gonzalez, Panks from Maryland. I think it was corner or tackle was the debate last year.
Right. And then you wondered which of those tackles was going to be there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if they didn't get one of those top tackles, what would they do? We're kind of the same conversation where they had two guys and more in a core for, and you felt, okay, you played with them. You can, kind of in theory, win with them. It's not this giant vacancy at one of those tackle spots, but man, you would love to upgrade there. And of course, they did with Broderick Jones.
Okay, loosely rewinding back to a year ago, tackle, cornerback seemed to be the speculation about where they could go in the first round. Well, what did their first two picks end up being?
Sure, tackle and corner.
All right, so I mean, you can't rubber. I know better than speaking in absolutes, but I mean, it feels like, you know, at least with one of those first two picks, a center would be involved in that.
Sure, but they're not picking at 32 this year the way they had the luxury last year of getting that top corner on the board. You know, one of those guys that falls out. Again, could centers fall? Sure. But if Zach Frazier falls to making up numbers 45 overall, that's a fall, I guess, but he's not coming to Pittsburgh. And ultimately, all that matters is who's coming to Pittsburgh.
And look, once again, if you take a center in the first round, it goes against the Tomlin Con Pro Day thing.
Right, it does. But if there's a year for it to break, it's the year where they only go to four Pro Days.
How many times, though, have we said over the years, do you think, if there's a year?
Every year, I'm sure.
You know, if we were to be honest and rewind this thing, you know, at some point during the pre-draft process, have we said, if there's ever a year to break the at some point, that streak's going to end. It just all things end, right?
Sure. But is there a year that has better evidence for it to happen this year just because of the lack of number of pro days they went to, because it is a small number compared to what they usually do. Right. There's no doubt about that.
That's another thing in here is there are fewer pro days to look at.
Yeah. And again, a lot of reasons for that. Scheduling NFL meetings, which I still hate the structure and the placement of, the Big 12 having one pro day, and we got very little information about who was there for that. Kind of speaking of which, I guess was more of a question, but mentioning Isaac Williams, the assistant O-line coach, and the value he's brought. That was a busy man. He was at that Big 12 Pro Day. We know that. He was at Georgia State. He coached in the Senior Bowl. So that's a guy, or the Shrine Bowl, one of the two. I always get them mixed up. I think Senior Bowl. But that's a guy that has actually probably played a pretty big part in this pre-draft process.
Mm-hmm. Back to the thirsty comment. I'm thirstier than they're letting on at a couple of positions.
Yeah, at center, at receiver, at slot corner. I mean, to me, there's a pretty big thirst there. Like, who are your starting receivers today? The season began immediately. It's George Pickens, and who's opposite of him?
Yeah, I think you have a rotation there, because you can't envision. You can put Calvin Austin on the field for some of those snaps. It gets messy once you get past George Pickens.
Right. So they're going to take a receiver, you know, at worst day two. Really, at this point, they're a 13 personnel team because they can't support two receivers out there. It's very much an old school Arthur Smith model. Should we go to the Brian Thomas stuff, or should we kind of hold that and kind of finish up Tomlin and Khan's presser?
Yeah, let's continue on some of the other talking points of Khan and Tomlin here.
Pulling off the draft for a moment, talking about some guys who are veterans, or at least currently on the roster, basically confirming that Cordell Patterson was signed in response to the kickoff change, which was the worst kept secret. It probably wasn't a secret at all. Pittsburgh was not trying to hide that. But Tomlin admitted, like, we don't know how the kickoff change is going to really affect things and how much will change and what will change and what will be the best strategy. So he said, yeah, we signed Patterson because of the kickoff rules, you know, more activity, chance for bigger returns, but no one really knows how this thing's going to all play out.
They knew enough about it out of it that as soon as they got out of that meeting, they got that contract inked. They didn't fool around with it.
Yeah, which was smart for sure to get that, you know, literally arguably the best kick returner in NFL history the second after they pass a rule that's going to increase the number of returns. But there's a lot more components to this change than just having one good return guy.
Right.
Because your blockers or your returner is nothing without good blocking, and the scheme and the guys you look for and the traits you look for at every position, coverage and return, could be totally different.
And the fact that this guy has spent time in the backfield as a running back, which there are certain kickoffs you could envision that would relate similarly to, you know, a running back situation and having to read a hole, so to speak, and all. I mean, that is just another reason why he was the guy.
Right, right. And then moving on from there at cornerback, question about Corey Trice Jr., Darius Rush, pair of rookies last season. Of course, Trice tore his ACL, missed his entire rookie year. Rush, Pittsburgh became his 13. He bounced around quite a bit, but Tomlin holding high expectations, says the old reasonable expectation for Trice and Rush to be much better players and can impact the team in year two.
Yeah, those guys have, as we mentioned, are kind of wild cards. You hope that they take steps in the right direction and can contribute in some capacity. Who knows? Maybe even, you know, if the progression's good enough, maybe they steal a starting spot at some point. But the key here's the key thing when it comes to Corey Trice. We talked about this at the end of the show, having that picture of him doing at least something during the early stages of the offseason, workout period, getting up underway here. The next date I have circled on my calendar is rookie minicamp, because I believe he should be eligible to participate in that, because he did sit out the season. And if indeed he is deemed eligible to participate in it, to what level will he be allowed to participate in it from a health standpoint? So that's the next date I have circled on the calendar when it comes to him. And then if he does not participate, you know, at a full level in that rookie mini camp, then obviously you would circle the OTAs as the next potential date in there. So did we learn anything new there? Not really. I think the big takeaway with Corey Trice specifically is, let's see what happens at this rookie mini camp.
Tomlin said that Trice was, quote, moving in the right direction when asked about Trice's status in that ACL recovery. Yeah, I mean, they're going to be careful with him still, I'm sure, as long as he's able to go out in the field, do something, maybe individual work. You know, I don't know exactly how much insight we'll get into that. Hopefully get a report or a video or something. But as long as he's on the field working, you know, in some capacity, I think that's a pretty good sign for his camp readiness.
All right. Also talked briefly about Cole Holcomb.
Yeah, really just status quo from, I think, Khan and Tomlin saying he's working hard to get back. Still no timetable for sure. A lot of similar comments that Khan made, I think, during the combine.
Right. And obviously he won't be eligible to participate in a rookie mini camp. So OTA, start of OTAs really becomes the first date on the calendar to just see what he's allowed to do and what he's not allowed to do there. So obviously a pretty brutal injury, and it won't be totally shocking if he's not a full go at OTAs.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be a full go at OTAs. Again, any participation from him, I think, would be good. He may be sitting out entirely, all speculation from me, but given how much they've harped on the severity of the injury, they're going to probably also be very careful with Cole Holcomb.
All right. What else takeaways from Khan and Tomlin?
Yeah, to me, that was really kind of it. As you mentioned earlier, Tomlin discussed the importance of the pre-draft visits, the 30 visits. Everyone calls them top 30. They're just, I mean, it's semantics, but they're 30 visits. There is no top 30 because there's no bottom 30. Just 30 guys you get to bring in. But Tomlin also said that the media probably makes a little too much out of it. I don't know. I mean, there's usually a pretty strong correlation that half the team's draft picks will come from that.
Sure. 30-man list. Sure. But not all of them. But they're, I will guarantee you that at least two of their picks this year will have come in for pre-draft visits, if not more.
Yeah, I think that's really likely overall. So, you know, the track record there, usually pretty consistent. It ebbs and flows, but generally I would say two to three names each year come from that list.
Right. And then, as we've talked in the past, you better be looking hard and fast at the Senior Bowl list of players that participated there, Shrine Bowl guys as well, too, because oftentimes if guys don't come in for pre-draft visits and they end up getting drafted, there's a good chance, if they weren't underclassmen, that they were at the Senior Bowl or Shrine Bowl. Of course, you could probably rubber stamp that for 31 other teams around the NFL as well.
Right, especially with the Senior Bowl relaxing some of the eligibility for its participants and just not having a bunch of underclassmen this year. It's a pretty senior-heavy class. And so you got a lot of fifth-year guys. You got a bunch of six-year guys, too. And so that brings up the age. I think that'll start to shift back to normalcy maybe next year, because I think some of the guys that are going to be next year won't be as impacted by the COVID year type stuff as the last couple of classes have been.
Yeah, look, you look at some of the ages, especially, you know, some of these guys, we don't know how old they are really until the Dane Brugler guide comes out. But you just look at the list as a whole. There's a lot of older kids in this class.
Yeah, and Pittsburgh generally looks for somebody younger, around 21 or so. Broderick Jones was, 21 last year when he was drafted. That's what they ideally shoot for, 21, 22 years old, as opposed to the 24-year-old rookie.
All right. Anything else earth shattering that they had to say?
No, I don't think
we knew we weren't going to get a lot of information. I guess your takeaway of, a tackle or guards moving to center was notable to some degree.
To a small degree, again, nothing earth shattering, but if they did select Barton, you could understand why they would overcome any potential reservations about moving to center and the projection there of a guy that predominantly played left tackle. I think it's really that and less, not that I was confident before, but really not getting any sense they have a desire to trade down. Could it happen? Right. As you said, sure. But I think I won't call it my wish, but I won't get the chance to do a victory lap because I floated the idea that maybe they would trade down.
What do you think about the Arthur Smith comment?
Not much, you know, just saying that Arthur Smith part of the process and a good component. And of course, we saw him at a couple of pro days. Where was he at? He was at North Carolina, Duke, and then he was with Tomlin at Georgia,
Clemson.
He go to Michigan.
Michigan, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah. Was he not at one of the big four that Tomlin Khan went to? Was he at Bama? We have the technology. I should just go ahead and pull up the list here. But he was, you know, obviously very active. He went to 5 pro days this year, actually the most of any, more than Tomlin and Khan and more than Terrell Austin. So that's a little notable.
Was there one of the, I know he was at Clemson. I know he was at Georgia, right? I know he was at Duke.
I know he was at
North Carolina. Yeah. Did he miss one of the ones that Tomlin and Khan was at?
He did not go to Alabama.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and also Pat Meyer did not go to Alabama too, right? So, I mean, in terms of, I mean, Alabama has more, I think, defensive guys to look at early rounds, but there is J.C. Latham, the tackle, although most projections have him off the board by number 20.
Right. Right.
But Smith was at Georgia, Clemson, Michigan, Duke, and North Carolina. Austin went to all 4 that Tomlin and Khan attended, Georgia, Clemson, Alabama, and Michigan. Pat Meyer at 3 pro days, the O-line coach, Oregon State, Oregon, Washington, and Aaron Curry at 3 pro days, the inside linebackers coach at Ohio State, Kentucky, and North Carolina. They're going to draft an inside linebacker. I'd be very surprised if they did not. Will it be super early? No, but I'm thinking 98 or 119 is where that inside backer will come to play.
Okay, anything else from Khan Tomlin?
Nope, I think that's it overall. Anything we miss or want to revisit, we can do so on the Wednesday show. Just a quick note here, Levi Wallace signing with the Denver Broncos. He had a visit with them last week, 2 weeks ago, but it sounds like a deal is going to get done. And so Pittsburgh has lost a couple of their backup corners, James Pierre to Washington, and now Levi Wallace headed to Denver.
Yeah, I mean, is that a loss?
No, there's a depth question.
Right, right. Absolutely. I mean, what are you expecting this deal to look like for Levi Wallace?
1 year for $3 million, $2.5 million, something like that.
Okay. Right.
Is that where you're headed?
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be a lot.
Yeah. But I mean, again, who are your backup corners right now on the outside? You got Dante Jackson, presumed starter, of course, Joey Porter Jr. And that's where I think Trice and Rush come into play, because those, not that, you know, they're going to add, but how early will they add? They got so many needs. Are they going to take a corner super early? You know, probably not. So there really could be a chance there for Trice and Rush.
Wonder what the reasoning is for Denver this close to the draft and with the compensatory free agent season officially ending next Monday. I wonder when it will become officially official, if you know what I'm getting
maybe
at.
Maybe they don't file the paperwork until next Monday or something like that. But I don't know where they're at in the formula. Right. They're going to get a comp pick for what, Cushenberry. So I don't know where they're at, you know, in terms of what picks they're expected to get or what value.
You know, the best thing that you can hope for is it happens before, that it becomes official before Monday, and that it's at enough of a price where it maybe cancels out somebody on that the Steelers have signed. But even so, it's going to take a minor. I bring all that up just because of the compensatory value formula and all like that. And, you know, the Steelers, even if they were to sign Levi Wallace at, I don't know, $3-4 million or whatnot, and it helped cancel out one of the guys that the Steelers signed in free. It'd take a minor miracle still at this point, I think, for the Steelers to come away with a compensatory pick for 2025.
Yeah, that seems to be where this team is trending based on their free agent moves and some of the information we get from Nick Corte and Over the Cap. Dave mentioned this a little bit ago, been some buzz from the draft analysts. Of course, the final week here, we're doing our mock drafts, but every national outlet and reporter that partakes in mock drafts are making their own, and we'll see where the winds blow this week. Probably still an O-line slant and focus, but there's been a couple of recent ones. I know from Peter Schrager and I think even Jonathan Jones, and I think even not a mock draft, but in a podcast from Dane Brugler, a lot of mention on Brian Thomas Jr., a receiver from LSU. Brugler thinking that 20 might be the floor for Thomas, and says Pittsburgh seems to really like him. Schrager and Jones had Thomas as their pick in their mock drafts. I don't think that's their final ones, but recent ones overall. What do you make of the buzz on Thomas?
Well, I mean, I think it's a little bit of validation for you, right? You had linked Thomas as a possible wide receiver way back early in the process, you know.
Now, before the Deontay trade, I had him in one of my mock drafts.
Right. Now, I'll be really shocked. I mean, you want to talk about getting away from the Blues Clues connect the dots and all. I mean, you would think, you know, with Khan and Tomlin not showing up at the LSU Pro Day, at the bare minimum, they'd bring him in for a pre-draft visit. And doesn't look like that has happened with him. So I would be really, really shocked if look, I'd be shocked in general if they went wide receiver at 20th overall. I would really be shocked if Thomas was the guy.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it certainly doesn't feel like it, although I think he's an interesting, talented player that would fit an obvious need to not have.
How many players have there already been in the pre-draft cycle that the Steelers really love this guy?
Just, I mean, broadly been, for the entire class?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, local reporters, national reporters, you know, I've seen the Steelers really love Graham Barton. I've seen the Steelers really love Brian Thomas. I've seen the Steelers really love Zach Frazier. I've seen who else? I mean, those are just the three that off the top of my head, mm-hmm. between national and local guys that have said the Steelers really love this guy.
No. Yeah, certainly you get some of that, you know, just fodder. But when you have some of the connected insiders, quote unquote, putting Thomas at 20 in their mock drafts, and I think Brugler not even just saying that they love him, but that's his floor. That's the furthest that he could go. It's notable. But when you don't have Tomlin Khan at your pro day, Andy Weidel was at the LSU pro day, but again, no Tomlin Khan. You know, had Thomas come in for a visit the way that A.D. Mitchell came in, that would have made more sense. That would attract more. Just hard for me to imagine the first round pick won't have one of those boxes checked, either the Tomlin Khan pro day or, failing that, the pre-draft visit coming to the facility.
I agree, sir.
But if he is to pick, I mean, I wouldn't hate it. You can have questions about how you address the offensive line at that point, but from a talent standpoint, focusing on the player and not what's around him, what they didn't do, what they did do in the case of Thomas, height, weight, speed guy, dynamic, great ball tracking downfield. I think he's got to work on his intermediate route running, but I think he has the tools and ability to sink his hips and change directions to do that. Willing blocker. It's a great clip of him. I think it's Alabama 2 years ago, running a corner out of bounds. And so I could certainly see why they would like Brian Thomas, but the box checking is not there with him.
And boy, if, it gets real messy with mocks too.
Yeah.
If you go wide receiver with that pick.
It does. So that's the news on Brian Thomas. We'll see. And more speculation, I'm sure, is to come. Anything we're missing here, Dave? It feels like we're missing something, but I think, you know, with the Tomlin Khan presser, that's dominating the conversation today.
Yeah, I think that's the main talking points today.
Let me ask you.
Go ahead.
Let me ask you this. And your mock draft will come out Wednesday, and we'll dive into that for the Wednesday show. Did anything that Tomlin and Khan say today sway you at all in terms of where you had in your head what you might do at number 20 for this team?
Nothing.
Nothing. Do you care to share where you might be leaning or any sort of thoughts you have as you make, you know, your one and only mock draft, the one shot at this thing?
No.
Okay. All right. This is not going well for my line of questioning here. Okay.
No.
So, but that'll come out on Wednesday. Mine will come out Tuesday. Again, the big debate, I think, is tackle and center. I've been leaning center. I'm starting to think, okay, could they go tackle? Well, obviously, they could. It really feels like a coin flip to me. I don't know where they're going to, you know, ultimately fall at.
No, but we are going to have some good conversations on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I'm sandbagging you here. I'm sandbagging everybody, because there are a few conversations still to be had at a couple of positions.
Give me one just broadly, a topic. What do you think is a really, besides center, because we know center, but what's a really big conversation you want to have on Wednesday?
One of them is just I talked a little bit about this during our roundtable podcast, is just the cornerbacks and especially those that go in the top 83 picks of drafts historically in relation to their height. You know, it's just there's some there would have to be some trend breakers for certain few of these guys to go as early as they're being projected to go. So that's one deeper discussion that we're going to have related to the slot cornerback position, I think.
Yeah, no, totally fair. Point well taken. I think to me, the biggest conversation we'll have on Wednesday, and we discussed this in the Tuesday show too, but for you and I, is we're pretty confident they're going to take a day two receiver, right? That feels like you can put that in. The question is who, because I think it is so wide open. There are so many different, I think Jonathan Hightrader said this in the Tuesday show, there's so many different flavors and just different types, and you wonder who is that best fit for Pittsburgh. You could go through half dozen. I think the group went through half dozen different names they could take at 51 if it is going to be a wide receiver.
And look, we built out with supposed, had they checked boxes, you know, of your study, I think we built a list of like 11 or 12 guys that I feel pretty good about a receiver coming out of that group if indeed they do take a day two wide receiver. So, but you know, will they mess us up and take, you know, take a wide receiver at 20th overall? Because that group's obviously seems like it would be a smaller group to choose from because of the expected guys that are going to go in the top 15 picks of the draft and all like that, you know? So, I'm less worried about that. And I'm more focused on who that guy will be in either the second or the third round.
Yeah, there's options. I mean, there'll be talent, but, you know, is it a Roman Wilson? I was watching more receivers last night, kind of last second prep work. And I think Wilson's a player that they're going to like, but he has played more in the slot. And, you know, Malachi Corley, somebody that they probably like, but, you know, I think his route tree was pretty non-existent. And I think his separation, he's not really natural at that. So is it a bigger guy they want if Xavier Leggett were to fall a little bit? They have done homework on a lot of these kind of freaky type of receivers, mm-hmm. A.D. Mitchell, Leggett being one of them. Is it going to be, you know, somebody else? Pearsall, if he were to fall, will he be there? That's the question. So again, they're going to take a receiver, no doubt about that. But finding that name, I've really wrestled with that as well.
Sure, I have too.
So we'll see. That's something I think we'll table for Wednesday. Any other thoughts here, Dave? Or do you want to get through some reader emails and close out today's show?
Yeah, what are we, about an hour in here? So we could... are we even an hour yet?
Just on about 55 minutes or so.
Let's get to some emails here. Jonathan Mason writes in, I really enjoyed the tackle versus center round one conversation in last Friday's podcast. Do you think that what makes that conversation so interesting is that while everyone would like to see Broderick Jones move to left tackle, tackle isn't as much as a glaring need as center and wide receiver? He says, I don't remember a Steelers draft in recent years to have two glaring needs like this going into it. I mean, was it last year, you know, kind of the talk about tackle and corner, you know, being, I mean, maybe not as glaring as holes, but holes that we thought they were going to fill overall. And he writes specifically here, interesting that why everyone liked to see, in other words, and we've kind of hit on this, it, you know, even though you'd like to see tackle maybe address, and look, for obvious reasons, Amarius Mims is going to be the pick on a lot of people's boards, and really should be the pick on a lot of people's boards if connecting the dots correctly here. But we had the conversation: is it as glaring of a need as maybe center or another wide receiver? So I mean, it's fair to be on both ends of that thinking. Man, this team really needs to get a tackle early so that Broderick Jones can get over to the left side sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where I get the push-pull of my desire, as I've said many times and maintained, to move Jones over. I think that's really important for him, for the organization, but also the recognizing there is nothing at center right now. Maybe they're higher on Herbig than I am, but I'm really concerned about that spot. So it's kind of this need at center with a little more of a want, quote unquote, with tackle. But to me, when it comes to the center, you know, tackle debate, is, I mean, they've just shown interest in all the top names, and there's depth, you know, there, and trying to find out who, you know, last year there wasn't depth at tackle. They only brought in three tackles last year for visits, right? Broderick Jones and Anton Harrison. And so you kind of had a cleaner way of evaluating that. People only brought in, I think, four first round.
Did they bring in Wright last year or no?
They did, Darnell Wright. Yeah, he did come in for a visit. Right. He was off the board by the time Pittsburgh picked. He went to Chicago. They only brought in, I think, four, you know, potential first round corners last year, and maybe five. And one of them was Porter, who was a local visit, didn't count against their 30. It just felt a little, there weren't as many names to discuss last year. It felt like this year it's the whole kitchen sink of names. And again, you take a center in the first round, can you get a tackle in the second round? You could. Names start to dry up. Same applies at center. Or if you take a tackle in round one, can you get that center 51? You're having a tougher time making it all fit.
The NFL is already starting to mess with your complete seven-round NFL mock draft.
Oh, they make a trade.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Zach Wilson has to get down.
The Broncos now have Zach Wilson. Right. The Jets have traded Zach Wilson to the Broncos.
Looks like a six and a seven, six, four, seventh, according to Rappaport. So that shouldn't. Yeah. All right. We can deal with the Zach Wilson trade. That's a minor compensation. I'm only in the sixth round of my full seven round mock draft. So I think I can make it work.
All right. Make sure you get the details of all them picks right.
Yeah. I'm going to have to. Yeah. If the NFL could just not make any trades for the next like 2 days so I can post my seven round mock, that'd be great.
Yeah. Thanks for the email, Jonathan. Let's go to Arthur Elliott. Dave and Ox, love the show. I believe we are in agreement that center, tackle, cornerback, wide receiver, interior defensive line are the top needs for this team. What are two from each position you guys like the most from the Steelers? Oh, Lord. I mean, look, I mean, the center position is those top three. I mean, there you can go through each of these three top centers, pick out good positives and some warts on each one of them there. So, I think it really is hard to rank each of the top three centers overall, other than to say that, man, you really hope that they come away with one of those top three centers. As far as tackle goes and what we think might be there, at least in the first round, I mean, it's Mims and probably Latham as far as guys that I feel potentially could be there, you know. As far as cornerback goes, I mean, if we're talking about not addressing it like the first round and guys that, you know, if they were to address it in the middle rounds, I think you get into the Melton, Phillips, Sainer still conversation there. Wide receiver, that list, you know, I really like Ricky Pearsall. I really like Roman Wilson. Leggett is very intriguing guy. Once again, you could build that out very easily. And as far as defensive line goes, I mean, as far as guys that quote unquote fit, I think it's a row and Mason Smith, you know, especially middle round guys that you kind of wonder where those guys might go, if they'll be on the board, you know, at certain picks. So I think loosely that's the list.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to look at it. That's obviously a pretty big question with a lot of names to potentially go through. When you look at center, I'll mention again, you look at the big three. If it's not one of those big three, then I think you really zero in on Hunter Norzad from Penn State as a guy that might be closer to plug and play ready with the IQ to step in and really have a true competition with Herbig. Wouldn't be guaranteed the spot. Obviously, there'd be a real battle there. But I think that makes sense overall and why he was brought in for a visit. So that's kind of how I view center. But yeah, I mean, again, you mentioned a lot of the key names.
Let's see. Larry Griffith really wanted to make sure we got his email read. Larry from Cary, North Carolina. Could the fact that Iuk's agent said nothing is happening with the 49ers be him trying to get his player paid? Talking down the draft capital would be a good thing for them in that what they care about is Iuk's contract. Is my tinfoil hat strapped on too tightly? Here's the long and short of Iuk and trade situation, Larry. I mean, he's regardless of what happens with him, he's going to come out of this with a contract, you would think, you know? So I don't think his agent tamping down, you know, some of these, you know, outside major media guys has anything to do with getting his payer paid, because that's going to be the end result of this regardless. Does that make sense?
It does, but when does it happen? Does it happen now? Does it happen in camp? Is it next year?
Well, you would think that if they were going, you know, and I use that loosely, I mean, with this wide receiver class and all like that, you would think the 49ers would really like to get a deal done before the draft. Now, part of getting that deal done would be allowing the agent and the player to talk to other teams, because no team, in my opinion, is going to trade for him thinking that they don't have a deal in place with him. So the end result, whether he stays with the 49ers or gets traded somewhere else, is him getting paid what he thinks he deserves to get paid.
Yeah. When you said make a deal, were you saying with his contract or a trade? I was thinking contract for some reason.
No, deal meaning trade.
Okay. I gotcha. Certainly you would ideally like to do that before the draft or on. That is the other factor. Is there a chance he gets dealt on draft night? I can't rule that out.
No. And until it doesn't happen. No, I mean, but, look, I know that there's GM speak and agent speak and all like that. My gut feeling on this, since kind of the John Lynch came out, you know, around right after the pro days and all like that, I truly believe they want to get something done with him.
I do too, but you know, will they ultimately is the question.
And here's the thing, you know, if they have to have, you would think they would have a sense of if they're even could potentially be in the ballpark of getting a deal done with him by the time the draft rolls around. Right.
Yeah. They should have an idea of his overall demands, and they understand they just pay Debo. They know that Ayuk's going to want to jump that in a similar structure, but more to what they gave Samuel 2 years ago.
Now, if it's minute details from there that you feel both sides could potentially work around, then I don't think he gets dealt at draft day. However, if you think, man, we are miles apart in this thing, and as far as contract goes, and we don't think that we're going to get closer, then maybe you entertain. You know, maybe you really get busy of working the phone starting this week up until the draft of getting him traded. But even so, whatever team, if they were to trade him, whatever team he's traded to is more than likely want to have those discussions about the contract done and not just acquire him and then work on getting the discussion, the contract discussions done after the fact.
Yeah, because you have no leverage. You just traded for him. You basically have to sign him. If you don't, you look terrible. And so you want to get that all figured out beforehand so you don't accidentally just acquire a one-year rental for, you know, a second-round pick potentially. But I think to the question, you know, why is his agent doing what he's doing? I think, A, the first time he responded was to shoot down the notion that Ayuk had asked for a trade, which is a pretty important thing, I think, to get out ahead of, to make sure that publicly your guy looks good and doesn't, you know, kick up even more and more rumors and people get mad at him for asking for a trade if a guy didn't do it. The second one, I think if the agent just kind of annoyed at all this chatter out there and is going to kind of just trying to shoot some of these guys down to hopefully get some of this chatter to stop, some of these kind of your tweet ports out there to hurt their credibility. I don't know. I'm just along for the ride when it comes to Ayuk right now.
Yeah, I am too. But by week one of the 2024 season, will Ayuk have a lucrative contract he desires?
That's a good question. I'll say yes, but I
say yes too. That's why I say the contract's although the contract is important to whatever team, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think what the agent has done recently has anything trying to. You know, he's going to get paid. It's just a matter of who he gets paid by, if it makes sense.
Sure. Yeah. I don't think the agent is doing any of his tweeting for that aspect. I think he's just trying to body some dudes on Twitter to take them down a peg or two. That's my read. And should mention here, Larry, Blake Watson, the running back from Memphis, who I kind of like, is from Cary, North Carolina. When you said that, I went, there's a prospect I studied from Cary, North Carolina, and that is one Blake Watson.
Jonathan Bancow writes in, longtime listener, first time emailer, been listening to the show since I was a freshman in high school. I'm now a senior in college studying mechanical engineering. Appreciate you guys. My question, if the Steelers were to select Graham Barton in the first round, and then in the second round, Zach Frazier is still on the board, would it be reasonable to draft Frazier to play center and then play Barton, as the right tackle? Interesting question, there. Man, you're already talking about. Here's the thing. Is there a team out there that might be willing to draft Barton just to play either left tackle or right tackle? I don't think. I mean, personally, I find the lack of length not great for a team to decide that. It feels like whatever team does draft Grant Barton, it will be to play him at either guard or center. Long story short, Jonathan, go to my go-to phrase there. I would be absolutely shocked if the Steelers went Graham Barton and then Zach Frazier in the second round. It feels like it's one or the other that's going to end up on the Steelers.
Yeah, I've gotten that question a couple times. That's not my read of it. If they go, they're going to take a true tackle, I think, to play tackle for them. A Mims, if they go later rounds, a Blake Fisher, maybe a Rosengarten, something like that. I don't think you're going to move Barton to a new position he's never played before and probably isn't ideally suited for. That's just kind of a messy all around.
Let's see if we can get one more in here from Brian. Writes in, if the Steelers draft a right tackle in the first round, allowing Broderick Jones to move to the left side, what happens to Dan Moore? And who would the team be counting on to be swing tackle on game day? Last season, the coaches pretty much said that Dan Moore can't play right tackle, so he couldn't be a traditional swing tackle. He's only go to left tackle. He'd only go to left tackle in case of injury. Does that make him a player likely to be traded before the season starts? Would the team really go into training camp with no better swing tackle option than the unproven Dylan Cook? Or would they sign a lower end offensive tackle with NFL experience to be the number three? We've been asked in several different ways. Do we think Dan Moore will get traded? I'd be surprised if they traded Dan Moore between now and week one of the season, regardless of what happens during the draft, there. And look, even though he's not, what you would deem the ideal swing tackle, meaning, both sides there, you could still work around it. I mean, if your right tackle got injured in the game, and if Dan Moore was the next man up in the bench, then more than likely Dan Moore would come in at left tackle and Broderick Jones would go back over to right tackle, is the way I envision it in my head. Now, obviously, there's going to be battles during training camp and all that stuff. You would hope at the very minimum if Dan Moore could at least be your third tackle. And if not, then is he really wanted across league circles anyway at that point? So you could work around the messiness of someone you drafted being the right tackle, Broderick Jones open this and that guy opening up at right tackle to start the season, Broderick Jones being your week one left tackle. And if something were to happen, it would just, it would depend on the position injured. Once again, if your left tackle, if Broderick Jones went down, then I would theorize that Dan Moore come in off the bench and be your left tackle. If your right tackle went down, then once again, maybe Broderick Jones goes over to right tackle and Dan Moore comes in at left tackle.
Yeah, it gets messy, but point taken. I don't think Dan Moore would truly become your swing guy. I think that scenario makes sense. Again, I'll be watching Dylan Cook. I think there's swing potential with him. If with another good year, what he showed last year to make the 53 was certainly kept because they liked him. They knew he'd get claimed off of waivers if they try to get him through the practice squad. So, we'll see. We'll cross that bridge. I think that'll be one of the questions if they do draft the right tackle. But I think, they could do something as Dave outlined. They could do something where Moore's left tackle and Cook's the backup right tackle. It's a little hard to say. But I think they'll appreciate having good tackle depth overall.
All right. I think we got through most of it here. As far as the email machine goes, once again, we have an exciting episode for Tuesday for you. That's 100% a pre-draft roundtable with several contributors who have done work and profiles on the site. I think that's a couple hours long, so hopefully that'll keep you entertained. And then Alex and I will be back on Wednesday reviewing our mock drafts and having a couple interesting discussions, I think, about a couple of positions on top of it there. So hopefully that'll be entertaining as we start inching closer to the start of the 2024 NFL draft on Thursday night in Detroit, Michigan. So in the meantime, as always, you can follow me on Twitter / X @Steelers Depot. Follow Alex @Alex_Kazarian. listeners, or follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com, hit the donate button. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com, hit the ad-free button and follow the directions that way. Certainly do appreciate everybody listening and sticking with us throughout this pre-draft process. And once again, be on the lookout for the Tuesday roundtable episode, and Alex and I back again on Wednesday with our normal episode. So until then, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.